All right, Robin Miller, we have our first postseason IndyCar weekend news. As you can tell, I have my full Barry White Caucasian husky voice thanks to, I don't know what I got, a head cold, a fever, something in Monterey. You are in Indianapolis right now at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the SCCA runoffs, which is a pretty awesome thing. Let's talk about IndyCar, brother. We had Pocono confirm that IndyCar will be back for 2018. I know you have been working the phones trying to get the 2018 calendar fully fleshed out. Not ready to reveal everything, but tell me about those efforts and whether you think fans will like some of the directions IndyCar is working on for the 2018 calendar.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be in 2018, but I do think Mark Miles is 100% convinced that the season needs to end on an oval, and that's good to hear. Which oval it is, I mean, he had Curtis Francois over at his house the other night for a cookout, so I think Gateway surely has the inside line, or should have the inside line, just because I think Mark saw how hard they worked at it and how successful it was and how they're already starting to make things better for next year as far as parking and getting in and out of the track. And just, you know, John Bomarito as the title sponsor is just, he's gung-ho. He was at Sonoma. So I think maybe this is looking more at 2019. I think Mark Miles would like to see some kind of a traditional finish with, you know, street course, road course, oval, maybe something like that. But I think he realizes that it doesn't matter if it's Sonoma or Laguna, you're just not going to get the big bang and the big crowd and the big atmosphere that you're hoping for that you had at Gateway. And that's what, if I can, I think anybody that was there would attest to. I mean, when mechanics are impressed with the way the crowd responded, that tells you a lot, because they've seen everything and they're not impressed by much. And I just think, I know Jay Fry is big on Phoenix, you know, to maybe end the season in a warm weather climate. I just don't know if Phoenix is ever going to approach the crowd that they had at Gateway. Plus, you could finish the season at a reasonable hour in the Midwest, and I think that was their other thing when they used to finish it at Fontana. They said it was just, it ended too late to get any kind of publicity, and it was hard to get people to watch because it was on so late on the East Coast. So I think Mark understands that he's inherited some things, and now with Jay's input and what he's observed, I think they both are thinking on the same page that, yeah, let's end this thing with an oval that's got some drama and a chance to be a big deal. And I think that's the best news, period. But I don't think that can be in 2018.
We also had IndyCar release its 2018 testing guidelines. I think it's because I have a head cold. I got about two paragraphs in and my eyes started going cross and backwards and flipped in the back of my head, where you've got five of these and two of those, but if you have one of these guys, you get three more of that, and manufacturers have this, but they can do it with two, not three. And I'm not saying it doesn't make total sense and it isn't completely clear. I'm just saying that with my limited brain functioning at the moment, it was too much for me to grasp. Were you able to swallow all of that and have something compute that made sense to you, Robin?
No, I look to you for all things mechanically, aerodynamic, and you know I'm a mechanical idiot, so I don't even try most of the time. And I didn't.
But this is just dates. This is just dates and numbers, so if I got to do that for you too, then we're seriously screwed.
I can handle dates and numbers, but I don't think I got to see that because I've been running around all day, and I haven't been online in a while. So did it just come out today, brother?
Yeah, and no worries there. I mean, long story short, we know a couple things. We've got some manufacturer tests that have been formalized. We wrote about that a couple days ago. So we will have manufacturers being able to get into the 2018 bodywork, the new electronics, the new brake package. Each team has been given five test days, three in the off-season, two in-season. Teams with rookie drivers have an additional 3 days of testing, one in the off season, two in season, so that's good. Definitely, you know, we've always been saying that what's the one thing young drivers miss today that they had back in the day, and that was lots of mileage so they can show up and actually, well, I'm not saying that these extra 3 days are going to be a night and day difference for them, but we do know that back in the day when a rookie would come into the opening race with, you know, 3,000 miles of testing, of course they looked ready to go. Whereas most kids, you see, it takes them 2 to 3 years to figure things out because they're having to learn on the job during race weekends. So who knows if that can tilt more in the rookie direction in the future, make that 5 days, I don't know what, but I'd love to see that continue a little bit further. And we're going to close here on the IndyCar test that just took place at Sebring, because we spoke with about 4 of the drivers there, so we'll save getting into that towards the end. Robin, looking at some of the other things that have happened this week, you just had a fun encounter with our dear friend Alan McDonald. We probably shouldn't say name the team owner that you saw him with, but you just bumped into him on the way to lunch. Our friend.
Well, sure we should.
Our friend Alan McDonald.
It makes it fun.
That's up to you, but our friend Alan McDonald, who was with Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, was James Hinchcliffe's engineer. He's parted ways with the team, and there are definitely a couple, when I spoke to him yesterday, other teams where I said, hey, I hear there's some, could be some openings here or there, and you happen to see him today with one of those teams where I told him you might talk to him. So, what, and you said he was shocked to see you, but there was general good flavor?
The guys that do Dinner with Racers, you did their show the first year, Ryan and Sean. We were doing Dinner with Racers inside of Sarah Fisher's go-kart track at the 911 Grill, or 1911 Grill, and Ed Carpenter and Matt and Alan walked by, and I screamed, slow down, I got to get this picture framed up. And Ed just thought that was really funny, and Alan looked like he'd seen a ghost. So I hope he lands with him. I hope he lands with somebody, because I like the guy a lot, and he's been a winner, and I think he'll – There's 2 or 3 teams looking for engineers, and I would certainly think he'd be one of the first guys to find a job.
So our friends at NBC Sports Network, they are honoring young champ Joseph Newgarden with a 1-hour special. I know that we loved back in the day when David Letterman had his show, the Indy 500 winner, and at times the IndyCar season champion would be on Dave's show. It'd be a big national thing. I'm not saying this is a massive national thing, but it is kind of nice to see both NBCSN and IndyCar dedicating an hour to the champ to try and promote that, and at a decent hour on the channel too. Isn't that kind of emblematic of NBCSN, though, of trying to go, you know, an extra mile, if not an extra many miles?
Yeah, I think if NBC gets the IndyCar contract, which we hope happens in 2019, I mean, I have been pushing for a show with Hinch and Joseph Newgarden. I mean, let them co-host it, or, you know, let Kevin Lee and I do something from Indy and throw it to them or something. But most basically, I want to see those guys having their own show, or at least a half-hour IndyCar show, which they're participating in. And I think our bosses at NBC are, I think they're open to that. And if you can fit it in behind the NASCAR show, in front of the NASCAR show, that NASCAR America show, that's great. Because I think NBC has pretty much taken over as the motorsports channel, and they understand that, okay, IndyCar's got a great series, but it's pretty much a secret around the country, so let's try and get out and promote it. And I like what the NASCAR guys did, especially, you know, Jeff Burton and Rick Allen would promote an upcoming IndyCar race during a NASCAR race. And I think there's a kind of a little bit of a community family type atmosphere now to NBC, and let's help with Formula One and IndyCar, because they're all our property.
We also saw late last week NBCSN reported ratings increase for the 2017 season on their channel. I know that might sound dumb to say, but obviously we have, 5-ish races on ABC, so obviously NBCSN's accounting would not include a different network. Gains weren't massive. They said it was roughly 3% increase. But tell me about that, Robin, because we're accustomed to seeing everything going down, it seems, in almost every form of racing and its TV ratings and, you know, this digital reach that they're also starting to compute now. Not crowing like a 3% increase is some sort of massive sign that everything's going to be, you know, back to the glory days, but I don't think there are going to be very many series that can talk about a gain once we get to the end of the season, so this must at least give a little bit of positive feeling to where things are going.
Well, I think this, you just got to be realistic. Compared to NASCAR gets $3 million a race, we get $600,000 on a good day. And NASCAR, the NASCAR race that led into Sonoma, even though Sonoma was a crushing bore as a race, the NASCAR crowd stuck around for the first hour, hour and a half. And I think that's what really you look at is, I think we all said when NASCAR came to NBC and NBCSN, that was going to help IndyCar, and it has. So the key is now is try to get, you just got to, you can't just throw everything at television and say, well, we blame, I mean, IndyCar, the Indy 500 has worst rating ever this year, 3.6, and it was another damn good race. So it's probably not fair that TV counts as much as it does, but unfortunately it does count that much towards sponsorship and whatever else you're basing your budget on. And I think with NBC and NBCSN, they've made it a point to say, okay, if these are our properties, here's what we're going to do to try and boost them and try and help them. And the fact that we're off for 6 months, it hurts. It's tough to keep NBC or NBCSN on the radar with IndyCar when you don't have a race for 6 months. I mean, that's why it's probably maybe even more imperative we try and have an off-season show just to keep it alive. And I know that's just me talking, but I'd love to see something like that down the road if NBC and NBCSN get all the IndyCar series like we hope they did in 2019. So it's going to be a slow process probably. But the main thing is, are more people watching IndyCar than they did last year? According to our numbers, they are. And like you said, you can't say that about too many sports right now. And you just have – it's tiny – it's baby steps, because it's 500,000 or 450 or 650 or – we had 1 million people watch the last half hour at Gateway or whatever it was, Texas. So you just got – they're small victories, but you just got to – that's how you got to look at it. Did that make any sense? Hell no.
No, but that's – we take pity on you. So I have an idea for the off-season. Instead of Battle of the Network Stars, Battle of the IndyCar Stars. We could maybe throw in the Mazda Road to Indy Kids, too, and, you know, have them get involved in a variety of sporting competitions, maybe a little bit of MMA, boxing. You know, let's see who's hungry. Let's see who really wants to come out of the offseason in a place of strength and, you know, whose arm's in a sling, got a black eye. I don't know. I'm just throwing something out there. I mean, if they can't be racing the full season, maybe they could beat us up, beat each other up for our enjoyment.
No, but I think it would work if you put NASCAR and the IndyCar guys in the same ring. I think you could get people to watch. I really do.
So we have our dear friend, Boston Grand Prix CEO John Casey, who's now suing the city for $15.5 million. This was another gem from late last week after we recorded the last podcast. Brother, should we file a lawsuit too? Because it seems like this guy, knowing how heavily discredited he's been, how his actions have been, you know, thoroughly revealed and uncovered as less than savory. I mean, look, it just seems like maybe we should get in and make some money too, because I would say we have just as many rights to that $15.5 million as he does, seeing as how we've got the race as far to completion as he did.
It kind of falls into a pattern, doesn't it? You've got the Providence thing never happened, and then the disaster that Vegas lost all the street race, champ car race in Vegas back in 2007. Great track, horrible crowd, and the guy had to cancel the next race at Phoenix because he lost so much money. I don't know. There's something, and now there's talk about two or three different people wanting to have a race around the football stadium in Nashville, and you just want to throw up your hands and say, no, 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 we don't want to race around football stadiums. Those are horrible races. They haven't worked out in the past, and everybody, I don't know, it's like we get all these flakes that want to become track promoters or race promoters or whatever. I mean, for everyone like Curtis, who's really sharp and on the ball, you get two or three that are off the wall, and they talk a good game, and they tell you how great it's going to be, like the Hawaiian Grand Prix back in the 90s, and then it never happened.
The Super Prix, or the Super Pricks, however you prefer to pronounce pricks.
There goes Paul Fanner. Paul Fanner's walking at a high rate of speed across the IMS parking lot.
Duck, don't let him see you. All right, well, let's close on the major topic of the week, and that was IndyCar completing the four venue 2018 bodywork validation electronics validation, brake validation, IndyCar putting to bed its testing of the 2018 package at Sebring. This time they had four cars helping out, not only Oriel Servia in the Schmidt-Peterson car and our boy Juan Monterior in the Team Penske Chevy. They also invited Chip Ganassi Racing to bring a Honda-powered car for Scott Dixon and Ed Carpenter Racing to bring a Chevy for Spencer Pigot. And it was really interesting to hear from lots of drivers. They also let the new champ, Joseph Newgarden, climb into Montoya's car after IndyCar was done with its test items and let Hinch climb in what Servia was driving when they were done. And so you end up with six drivers coming away, four of them with first-time experiences with the car. And they had mostly positive things to say. Dixon was, I think, the most surprised at how big the difference was and how much work was will be needed to get setups into an area to work with a huge cut in downforce in maximum downforce road course trim. What did you think listening to what everyone had to say, though, Robin? Are you heartened by the fact that everyone's talking about how their steering wheels are rarely ever still, and they're having to modulate throttles to keep from spinning, and, you know, braking is now a thing where the back's trying to beat the front if you're not careful? I mean, it sounds to me like everything we've been asking for, an animal to drive that really separates the best from not the best, is what IndyCar has happened upon.
Well, you hear them, they've all said since day one, Servia and Monterior, that, you know, it feels like you're going fast down the straightaway again, and you can brake later, you can slide the car a little bit, you can tuck up behind guys a little bit more. And that's exactly, hopefully, what's going to turn some short track races and some road course races and maybe some street car races that haven't had a lot of excitement in the last couple of years. Maybe that's going to be the thing that turns them around. But I like the fact that they all seem to think in your interview that it's, you know, some said it was going to be more difficult than others, but the fact that it was going to be harder to keep the thing underneath them, and that's the true measure of racing, is who can do the best job. And if everybody's not flat out and it looks too easy, the harder they make it, if they don't lose the quality of racing, I can't see how anybody doesn't applaud that. That's exactly what you're going for. That's what you want. And a lot of people are still saying, you know, okay, now just pour in a couple more 100 horsepower and we got exactly what we want. So Jay Fry, Tino Belli, Bill Pappas, they've got a plan. They're executing it. It looks pretty damn good. And for the first time, we've got something that looks like it's headed in the right direction. And everybody's kind of pulling in the same direction, which is pretty much unheard of in IndyCar racing for the last 25 or 30 years. So I think optimistically, you know, everybody's always optimistic in the off season. We're going to have a great year. But this is about the car and maybe what it's going to be like to drive and how it could be better for the competition. So from that standpoint, I think that's what's got the fans excited, is that they got something that they can really maybe look forward to next year, besides the usual races that are good. Maybe there's a chance that 80% of them will be good, and that's all you can hope for.
Amen to that. Well, we're going to close here in a sec. Also, a little bit of a sports car note, but definitely related back to IndyCar. We learned that our boy Elio Castroneves had a pretty decent crash in testing at Road Atlanta Turn 1. You never have a small crash Turn 1 there. While testing a P2 sports car with Team Penske, Tim Sindrick texted me this morning from Australia to say they should have a direction to announce either today, Thursday, or tomorrow, Friday. So seeing as how we're almost at lunchtime, California on Thursday, could be either later today or tomorrow. But I'm fairly well convinced they're going to turn up and race there. Also have a fairly strong belief that the drivers would be Castroneves, Simon Pagenaud, and Juan Monterior, so we'll look for confirmation there. And other than that, we are going to sign off and hand off to the four interviews that I did right after the Sebring test, starting with Joseph Newgarden, heading to Scott Dixon, then to Spencer Pigot, and then we're going to close with our boy James Hinchcliffe. All right, brother, well, enjoy the parking lot, and you don't have to keep hiding from Fanner anymore. And off we go with our four IndyCar drivers.
You know, you notice the downforce loss. Car feels quite a bit different. I think setup-wise, we definitely are going to have to run through some things and, you know, reconfirm what we like, what we don't like on this, you know, amount of downforce. You know, I didn't really get to do too much. I'm just kind of helping, you know, IndyCar out a little bit on the brake stuff in the afternoon, and then just working with Penske to understand some stuff for the off season. So I didn't really get to explore setups too much, but car definitely feels quite a bit different, in my opinion, from what we've been experiencing over the last two years.
Is that a feeling you think you will end up liking once you get some more mileage in it, or too soon to tell whether it'll fit you, suit you or not?
I mean, I'm kind of impartial. I think we've definitely been we have definitely been spoiled with the super downforce, because the car does not work nearly as well as it used to. I mean, to me, it's a lot lazier, and you know, it just does everything worse. So you'll have to redial your brain back, and then, you know, that's not a problem. You'll just adjust.
Yeah, yeah.
To what the new capability and grip level of the car is. I think it's more drivable. It definitely feels like it has a more drivable window in it. It's more predictable, I would say. But just, you know, harder from a grip standpoint. Does everything worse. You gotta, you know, easier to make mistakes, especially on an initial test day trying it. It was easier to make mistakes trying to get used to it. So I think it'll tighten everyone back up as far as, you know, their focus on putting it together and not making a mistake and, you know, staying online and all those sorts of things. The car will be less forgiving from a grip standpoint, but also more drivable from another standpoint.
And do you like a car moving around beneath you, dancing a little bit, either, you know, corner exit, braking, etc.? Or are you a guy, driving style wise, you'd prefer it planted the whole time? Because there's some drivers, you know, who, you know, live for the thing dancing around, and that's where they demonstrate their skills. And there are others who don't really care for that.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, I think it's a matter of just getting, you know, reprogramming your brain and getting used to it. You know, I think the good guys will do that regardless of what the downforce is. You know, they'll figure out where the limit is, and they'll live on it. So I think that's, you know, what I'll try and do. I do like the longer break zones in a way, because I think if you can build a better race car and build a better setup, then, you know, there's more ability to overtake. I definitely noticed there's more depth there, or at least, you know, it's opened up the brake zone to where you can fight for more depth on your car and try and beat people. So that's exciting to me. I think that's a good thing for racing. And, you know, as far as the grip of the car, just get used to it as much as possible, and you just have to, you know, build a great race car to suit it.
Last question. So if we're looking at the hairpin at Sebring, for example, you know, as you're heading towards the bridge into the braking zone, how much longer are we talking on average? You know, is this braking zone now with this package? I mean, is it, you know, 10 meters, 20 meters? You know, is it significant or not so much?
I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell you off my head, because I didn't get a figure on data, so I don't know. Exactly, but it was noticeable to me in the car. You know, I would be braking, I felt like, at least, you know, half a cone deeper, you know, without giving you an actual figure. I think, you know, you're braking at 2.5 into turn 7 before you're braking at 3 now.
Interesting.
So, you know, that's a significant change. You know, it's very noticeable inside the car, in my opinion. You know, again, this was, I think, to really work on setup stuff or trying to improve that. So I think that will tighten up as we get the cars better for this downforce level, but it will definitely be more elongated, you know, more towards what the DW12 was. Like, we'll go back to that sort of brake zone.
It was interesting. I think for us it was fairly tough. I think, I don't know how the others ran, but we, you know, we first time to run the calf, we had the new brakes, and we also had the new Cosworth system. So there was lots of things to try and get through. We had quite a few teething problems to start with, just, you know, trying to get everything to talk to each other and We got running okay in the end of the day. You know, it definitely took quite a bit of adjustment to get the car, you know, where we needed it to be. It was definitely quite loose, quite tough to get braking correct. Typical things when you're taking 1,000 pounds or 1,500 pounds of downforce off the car. So it's you know, I think it fundamentally you have to change, you know, the way you approach the setup or whatever, quite different. So, but yeah, you know, we ton of miles. You know, the car ran pretty solidly. We had no, you know, overheating issues. You know, brakes were good once we got them dialed in. You know, it's just different.
How about from a driving experience? I mean, you, Montoya, there are some guys, you know, with fast hands who can stay on top of a car that's moving around beneath them. How much of that do you think is going to be kind of normal on road and street courses when we get to next year? You know, like, do you think that you can develop the setups more so it's not doing that so much, or is that going to become kind of just a part of life?
I think you'll dial in, you know, a lot more. You know, that was kind of our first go of it. You know, I think dampened springs and even geometries will probably have to change a little bit. The rear was definitely a lot more exposed than, you know, I think when I'd had brief conversations or heard through the pipeline what, you know, Montoya and Oriel thought of the car, you know, after Mid-Ohio, they were pretty comfortable with it and thought it was quite good. But then when I saw Oriel today, you know, he was struggling big time as well with braking and being very loose. So, you know, I think in the long run, Firestone, I think, are working on a slightly different tire for it, which, you know, which is good to see that they're doing that. But then you definitely have to, you know, the car we finished with today is nothing like a Sebring car that we've, you know, it maybe is similar to what we've run, you know, if you go DW12 or even before that, but nothing similar to what we run right now.
Yeah, you can definitely feel there's less downforce. I mean, it's, yeah, you know, I wouldn't say it's necessarily more challenging. It's just challenging in a different way. You know, you definitely are sliding around a little bit more in the corners. You're having to work steering wheel a little bit more. The car's definitely not as planted. I think that, you know, it probably will end up magnifying any kind of mechanical grip deficiency you might have. So, it's going to be interesting from a setup point of view as well to try and maximize that side of things. Whereas, you know, maybe with all the downforce before it might have hidden a few balance issues or something like that. So, but yeah, it was fun. I mean, the brake zones are a little bit longer. The power down's a little bit more difficult. So definitely feel it, and it's a lot of fun.
Did the car remind you of any of the cars you've driven before at any level? Obviously faster, but I mean, stylistically, did it stand out as, you know, anything similar to what you had to do in Pro Mazda or anything else? Or did it feel like a totally different animal?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was super, you know, relatable to anything else. I mean, you know, it's definitely, I think, going to be really important to be able to brake well and accelerate well, because you're not going to have all the downforce to keep up the minimum corner speed. So, you know, in a way that was very important in Indy Lights as well, because I don't think that the Cooper tires really have as much lateral grip as, you know, they do longitudinally. So they brake and accelerate very well, but through the mid corner, they don't seem to have as much grip as they do in other areas. So maybe it'll be a little bit closer to that, but at the end of the day, I mean, minimum corner speed and how much speed you can carry through the apexes is still going to be important.
So I know it was only one day with this new car, but I mean, it wasn't, you know, we're talking, what, 10 days ago you were in the 2017 car at Sonoma, crazy downforce levels. You thinking you're going to enjoy this new driving challenge next season? And how long do you think it's going to take you to wrap your head around it or get, you know, all the way up to speed with some of these new driving challenges it's going to present.
Yeah, no, I think I'm definitely going to enjoy it. I think, you know, it's another challenge. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, it's not necessarily going to be any harder, I don't think, than the old car, because it was obviously very difficult to get everything out of that car, and only, you know, doing perfect laps really got you to the front. And I think it's going to be more of the same, but you're just going to have to do it in a different way. And, you know, that challenge excites me. And I think maybe it'll be a little bit more fun. You're going to be definitely working the car a little bit more, sliding around, kind of having to modulate the throttle. You're not just going to be able to go from zero to 100% throttle, like you could at some places with the old car. And, you know, it's just going to bring out a little bit of a different style, I think, that hopefully I can get used to pretty quick. You know, I felt pretty good today, getting used to it and the, you know, what felt like lack of grip, but at the end of the day, it still got a lot of downforce.
It was definitely different for sure, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, this definitely, based on talking to Oriel, was the biggest difference from all the different tracks they've been to compared to the old car. You know, and I remember coming here when we got the 16 kit and just being floored with how much downforce we have, and floored with how you had to relearn how to brake, basically, because you could go so much deeper than you'd ever thought you could, and, you know, how much entry speed you could turn in with at the hairpin and all these things. And now it's just kind of like going back to basics, and you're going faster at the end of the straights. Your brake zones are that little bit longer again. Your cornering speed's a little bit lower, but it feels like an IndyCar, you know? So, based on what we've seen with the nose to tail running that Juan and Royal have been able to do, it certainly sounds like it's going to race better, and it's still going to be a hell of a lot of fun to drive. And, you know, I can't wait to get, you know, a proper day in it and start learning a little more about this thing.
In the couple hours you had, and mind you, that's not consecutive hours on track, but in the couple hours that you had in the car, how much busier were you in the cockpit with your hands or modulating brakes and throttle, and the thing that seemingly fans have been saying, you know, we want a car that's a little more animalistic or tougher to drive. The air doesn't do, you know, the downforce isn't helping so much. Do you get a feeling that that's the direction we're headed, or that's what IndyCar has come up with?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, days of seeing IndyCars drifting around turn one at Mid-Ohio, I'm sorry to report, you know, died in the 80s with the advent of ground effects. So, you know, or the popularization of ground effects. And we still have a radial tire that doesn't love a lot of slip angle, and now we're producing most of our downforce from a floor that needs air going straight under it, not sideways under it. So, you know, it's not going to be Gilles Villeneuve, you know, drifting his T12 through corners in that sense. I mean, we all wish it was that, but it's not, which is fine. But for sure, it's going to be easier to make mistakes. More emphasis will definitely be put on a driver's ability to keep the thing pointed in the right direction. You don't have the downforce to kind of band-aid either a handling imbalance or B, flat out a mistake on the driver's side. So it's definitely going to put a little more emphasis on us.
The last dumb question for you is, obviously with the aero kit era, upper body strength really became a priority for road and street courses. Not saying you would want to be shedding much muscle mass, but can you predict or foresee any changes to your training regimen to do less of something you've done through 2017 season or more of something else?
I'm definitely going to wait until I get onto a road course to make that decision. But just based on what I, you know, felt today, I would say there's definitely going to be an adjustment to the training schedule, you know, in 2018 and beyond. So, you already kind of missed that, but on the other hand, we were getting pretty close to, I think, pushing the human limits of, you know, what guys could do for 200 miles at places like Mid-Ohio and Barber. So we'll see, but I want to see it in full downforce road course trim before, you know, I make any big, phone calls to Jim Leo and say, cut this, add that, but definitely just, even compared Sebring to Sebring, I'd say there's a good chance you won't have to put quite as much emphasis on as much strength training as we have the last 2 years.
Pure calf muscles. That's all I'm working on for now on. It's calf muscles.
Exactly right.
That's
those gentle feet.